The fake peace that prevailed on Sundays was made more irritating by Aunt Alexandra's presence. Atticus would flee to his office directly after dinner, where if we sometimes looked in on him, we would find him sitting back in his swivel chair reading. Aunt Alexandra composed herself for a 2-hour nap and dared us to make any noise in the yard. The neighborhood was resting. Jim, in his old age, had taken to his room with a stack of football magazines, so Dill and I spent our Sundays creeping around in deer's pasture. Shooting on Sundays was prohibited, so Dill and I kicked Jim's football around the pasture for a while, which was no fun. Dill asked if I'd like to have a poke at Boo Radley. I said I didn't think it'd be nice to bother him and spent the rest of the afternoon filling Dill in on last winter's events. He was considerably impressed. We parted at supper time, and after our meal, Jim and I were settling down to a routine evening when Atticus did something that interested us. He came into the living room carrying a long electrical extension cord. There was a light bulb on the end. "I'm going out for a while," he said. "You folks will be in bed when I come back, so I'll say good night now." With that, he put his hat on and went out the back door. "He's taking the car," said Jim. Our father had a few peculiarities. One was he never ate desserts. Another was that he liked to walk. As far back as I could remember, there was always a Chevrolet in excellent condition in the car house, and Atticus put many miles on it in business trips, but in Macomb, he walked to and from his office 4 times a day, covering about 2 miles. He said his only exercise was walking. In Macomb, if one went for a walk with no definite purpose in mind, it was correct to believe one's mind incapable of definite purpose. Later on, I bade my aunt and brother good night and was well into a book when I heard Jim rattling around in his room. His go-to-bed noises were so familiar to me that I knocked on his door. "Why ain't you going to bed?" "I'm going downtown for a while." He was changing his pants. "Why? It's almost 10 o'clock, Jim." He knew it, but he was going anyway. "Then I'm going with you. If you say no, you're not. I'm going anyway, here." Jim saw that he would have to fight me to keep me home, and I suppose he thought a fight would antagonize Auntie, so he gave in with little grace. I dressed quickly. We waited until Auntie's light went out, and we walked quietly down the back steps. There was no moon tonight. "Dill'll want to come," I whispered. "So he will," said Jim gloomily. We leaped over the driveway wall, cut through Miss Rachel's side yard, and went to Dill's window. Jim whistled Bob White. Dill's face appeared at the screen, disappeared, and 5 minutes later he unhooked the screen and crawled out. An old campaigner, he did not speak until we were on the sidewalk. "What's up?" "Jim's got the look arounds. An affliction Calpurnia said all boys caught at his age." "I've just got this feeling," Jim said. "Just this feeling." We went by Mrs. DeBose's house, standing empty and shuttered. Her camellias grown up in weeds and Johnson grass. There were 8 more houses to the post office corner. The south side of the square was deserted. Giant monkey puzzle bushes bristled each corner, and between them an iron hitching rail glistened under the streetlights. A light shone in the county toilet. Otherwise, that side of the courthouse was dark. A larger square of stores surrounded the courthouse square. Dim lights burned from deep within them. Atticus's office was in the courthouse when he began his law practice, but after several years of it, he moved to quieter quarters in the Macomb Bank building. When we rounded the corner of the square, we saw the car parked in front of the bank. "He's in there," said Jim. But he wasn't. His office was reached by a long hallway. Looking down the hall, we should have seen Atticus Finch, attorney at law, in small, sober letters against the light from behind his door. It was dark. Jim peered in the bank door to make sure. He turned the knob. The door was locked. "Let's go up the street. Maybe he's visiting Mr. Underwood." Mr. Underwood not only ran the Macomb Tribune office, he lived in it. That is, above it. He covered the courthouse and jailhouse news simply by looking out his upstairs window. The office building was on the northwest corner of the square, and to reach it, we had to pass the jail. The Macomb Jail was the most venerable and hideous of the county's buildings. Atticus said it was like something Cousin Joshua St. Clair might have designed. It was certainly someone's dream. Starkly out of place in a town of square-faced stores and steep-roofed houses, the Macomb Jail was a miniature Gothic joke, one cell wide and two cells high, complete with tiny battlements and flying buttresses. Its fantasy was heightened by its red brick facade and the thick steel bars at its ecclesiastical windows. It stood on no lonely hill, but was wedged between Tyndall's hardware store and the Macomb Tribune office. The jail was Macomb's only conversation piece. Its detractors said it looked like a Victorian privy. Its supporters said it gave the town a good, solid, respectable look, and no stranger would ever suspect that it was full of niggers. As we walked up the sidewalk, we saw a solitary light burning in the distance. "That's funny," said Jim. "Jail doesn't have an outside light." "Looks like it's over the door," said Dill. A long extension cord ran between the bars of a second-floor window and down the side of the building. In the light from its bare bulb, Atticus was sitting propped against the front door. He was sitting in one of his office chairs, and he was reading, oblivious of the night bugs dancing over his head. I made to run, but Jim caught me. "Don't go to him," he said. "He might not like it." "He's all right. Let's go home. I just wanted to see where he was." We were taking a shortcut across the square when four dusty cars came in from the Meridian Highway, moving slowly in a line. They went around the square, past the bank building, and stopped in front of the jail. Nobody got out. We saw Atticus look up from his newspaper. He closed it, folded it deliberately, dropped it in his lap, and pushed his hat to the back of his head. He seemed to be expecting them. "Come on," whispered Jim. We streaked across the square, across the street, until we were in the shelter of the jitney jungle door. Jim peeked up the sidewalk. "We can get closer," he said. We ran to Tyndall's hardware door, near enough, at the same time discreet. In ones and twos, men got out of the cars. Shadows became substance as light revealed solid shapes moving toward the jail door. Atticus remained where he was. The men hid him from view.
"He in there, Mr. Finch?"
a man said.
"He is," we heard Atticus answer, "and he's asleep. Don't wake him up."
In obedience to my father, there followed what I later realized was a sickeningly comic aspect of an unfunny situation. The men talked in near whispers.
"You know what we want," another man said. "Get aside from the door, Mr. Finch."
"You can turn around and go home again, Walter," Atticus said pleasantly. "Heck Tate's around somewhere."
"The hell he is," said another man. "Heck's bunch is so deep in the woods they won't get out until morning."
"Indeed? Why so?"
"Called him off on a snipe hunt," was the succinct answer.
"Didn't you think of that, Mr. Finch?"
"Thought about it, but didn't believe it."
"Well, then,
My father's voice was still the same. That changes things, doesn't it?
It do, another deep voice said. Its owner was a shadow.
Do you really think so?
This was the second time I heard Atticus ask that question in 2 days, and it meant somebody's man would get jumped. This was too good to miss. I broke away from Jim and ran as fast as I could to Atticus. Jim shrieked and tried to catch me, but I had a lead on him and Dill. I pushed my way through dark, smelly bodies and burst into the circle of light.
Hey, Atticus!
I thought he would have a fine surprise, but his face killed my joy. A flash of plain fear was going out of his eyes, but returned when Dill and Jim wriggled into the light. There was a smell of stale whiskey and pig pen about, and when I glanced around, I discovered that these men were strangers. They were not the people I saw last night. Hot embarrassment shot through me. I had leaped triumphantly into a ring of people I had never seen before. Atticus got up from his chair, but he was moving slowly, like an old man. He put the newspaper down very carefully, adjusting its creases with lingering fingers. They were trembling a little.
"Go home, Jim," he said. "Take Scout and Dill home."